You are listening to the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 131 for the week of June 15th, 2011.
Welcome back to the Experience Points Podcast. I'm George Alvor.
My name's Scott Juster.
And we are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. And it's been about 5 days since E3's wrapped up this year. And, you know, a lot of things came out of E3. And I feel like we're a little bit obligated to talk about some of the more notable news.
Mm-hmm. Now that the dust, if you'll pardon the pun, has settled just a little bit.
And, you know, I don't know, maybe this is just me. I have a little bit of experience with E3, maybe not a ton, but this year seems actually really important. Like, yeah. There was a lot going on, a lot of crazy news, a lot of sort of, you know, new hardware came out, and it's the sort of peek at what's to come over the next few years that it seemed E3 last year didn't offer.
Yeah, lots of questions and lots of interesting directions that companies are taking, too. Like, a really kind of... like a state of the industry style E3.
And we didn't get a chance to go to E3 ourselves. You know, we're both very far away from there right now. But we watched most of the press conferences live, and so we'll probably arrange the podcast in order of press conferences and then sort of touch on some of the games as they come along or sort of as we wrap up the podcast. And this podcast will go probably a little bit longer than most. Just because the sheer breadth and amount of things to talk about.
The majesty that is E3.
Yeah, frankly, it's crazy. We could easily do a podcast on any one single announcement.
Yeah. So, the big M is first up, right?
Yeah, I mean, if we go in chronological order, Microsoft had their first press conference last Monday. Big announcements? You know, I don't actually know if there was that many big announcements. They really sort of seemed to be fine-tuning their Kinect pitch.
Yeah, I think that was the big takeaway for them, because it was a, you know, they're still trying to figure out what's up with this whole Kinect thing. I mean, it sold fairly well, but there just wasn't a lot of software for it since last year. I mean, that's basically when they showed everything was last E3, and all the stuff that I saw was not inspiring a lot of confidence.
You know, there was actually a few really cool things that I thought were particularly interesting from the Kinect conference.
Oh man, okay, you're gonna have to fill me in on this, because it's weird. I'm usually not this pessimistic about this type of stuff, but I came away from this whole thing with a bad taste in my mouth.
I mean, like, okay, so sure, you know, all of the announcements were a little cut and dry. It was sort of what was to be expected. I think one cool thing that I thought at least was interesting was the demonstration of Ghost Recon's, I guess they call it, I forget what they call it, but it's a sort of gun forging mode. Yeah. In which they use the motion controls to sort of expand the contents of your weapon and be able to customize it on the fly with your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt very, what's that movie with Will Smith? Not Will Smith, sorry.
Minority Report with Tom Cruise?
Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very Minority Report, and it felt very futuristic, and it felt like that was the sort of technology that I wanted to see coming out of Kinect last year, when they were first announcing what it would be like.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a lot more interesting if that feature had any relevance to what you were doing in the game, you know?
Like, yeah, I mean probably not, but, you know...
As basically a tech demo is how I saw it.
Yeah. But, I mean, you're absolutely right. And who knows whether or not it's going to be implemented in any significant way in the actual game. But when I was thinking about ways in which the Kinect can sort of operate, you know, if the technology is a little bit better, then that could actually be used in a really cool and fun and interesting way. Maybe not in the game itself, but at least it felt like Kinect was making some sort of progress.
I mean, you're right in that type of fidelity and those types of movements can be useful. It's just disappointing to see it put into something like Ghost Recon, where it's like, oh, you know, the guy's kind of waving at the screen to fire the gun. Like, it just they're trying to solve a problem that no one's having, which is how to build a better shooter. Like, that's fine. Like, Cliff Bleszinski already solved that problem. Like, you don't need Kinect for it. Yeah. And so I would rather see, like, who does Layton? Level 5 or something like that? I mean, like, yeah, I know they're in bed with Nintendo, but, like, imagine a puzzle game where you had to do gestural things to solve puzzles. I mean, like, that's what you should be using this thing for, not, you know, clamping it on to some very streamlined process to make it clunkier.
Yeah. Was there anything in the Microsoft conference that you did find interesting, or?
I like the Kinect Sesame Street game.
I would have to say, like, Tim Schafer did an awesome presentation, and it felt really genuine.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole Kinect presentation was awkward because there were kids on stage for most of the time, and having kids at E3 kind of feels like when there are kids at a bar, like, you just kind of feel bad for them and embarrassed that you're there. Yeah. It's like, oh, you shouldn't be here, and you shouldn't be exposed to this, And now I'm ashamed for even being here too. You know, like, I don't know. I just got like a really weird vibe from all that. But then Tim Schafer came on stage and actually made a joke about the fake family. He said something like, "Unleash the fake family unit" or something. And then, like,
yeah, he said they look so lifelike.
Yeah. And so, like, at least he acknowledged how absurd it was. You know, the whole spectacle of it. Then again, you know, but you know, in all seriousness, his Kinect game is something that I think is really useful. You know, that is an interesting way of using the technology and an interesting way of going after a certain segment of the population that doesn't really get served very well, which is kids and parents playing the same game.
And that's kind of the way I felt about the conference as a whole, right? Like, Tim Schafer recognized these are the sort of hoops that we have to jump through when we are advertising and creating these games, right? It was very clear when he was on stage that he knows Sesame Street is not going to be for the hardcore gamer. This isn't for the person watching this online with bated breath at work when they should be working. you know, this is a game for kids and families, and he's very sincere. And when he told the story of, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to make a game for my child or whatever, you know, it gets the point across that Sesame Street was just one example, but all of the sort of things that they talked about during that press conference and throughout the other conferences as well that weren't necessarily targeted towards us, it doesn't mean that those products are weaker or second string in any way. They're just not for us.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I felt like the conference as a whole was pretty much the opposite of last year's, which was, you know, we're going after the casual, we're expanding the definition of gamer, blah, blah, blah. Like, especially Microsoft, but Sony to a different extent was... they were all about retreating. They were like, we're serving the core. Every single person that got up on stage mentioned the core. It's all about the core. And then, you know, they showed off Kinect games like Fable, and they had some Forza head tracking, and they had the Star Wars Kinect game, which looked terrible.
God, that was so awful.
It was really awkward too. Like, you could see the visible lag in the input, and I don't know. I'm really not excited about the new way of doing a hardcore Kinect game is basically a rail shooter.
Yeah.
And, like, Fable is a rail shooter too. No matter what Peter Molyneux might try to tell you, like, that thing is a rail shooter.
Yeah. You know, actually, I saw a funny comic that I'll go ahead and post in this podcast post, but I almost feel bad for Kinect because in some ways Nintendo sold the sort of motion control is the future. And now they're kind of stuck with Kinect and went into this conference marketing it as, like, we can do core and Kinect at the same time. Isn't this great? And then the other two press conferences that we'll get to shortly kind of blew people out of the water with, no, here is a hardware that is not motion-based that is going to be the future. Forget motion control. We got you good.
Yeah. Let's move on. And then Microsoft is stuck with all these Kinect things that they had in the pipeline and Kinect things that they rejiggered to try to target a traditional audience. You know, they forced the BioWare guys to implement voice commands in Mass Effect that for some reason you can't use a regular microphone on. You have to have a Kinect. Like, I have no idea why that's the case.
Yeah, okay. So I feel like I should comment on this because I am...
You're the Mass Effect expert.
I am the Mass Effect guy of our relationship, if you will. The voice commands for choosing which dialogue option you're going to make is pretty stupid, I would say. It's much faster just pressing the button. It's really not that much of an issue. And it feels really weird, or at least seemed really weird, hearing a guy say his response and then have Shepard mimic that response, but even say something else, like sort of repeating what you had already said.
It calls attention to the disparate, like, sometimes I would choose a thing in Mass Effect that I thought was going to be, like, a sarcastic quote, but really it's an angry statement.
Yeah.
Like, it just calls attention to the disconnect between what you choose and how the virtual actor acts it out.
And it also kind of reminds you that you're not Shepard, you know? Yeah. You hear yourself speak, and you're like, I didn't say that nearly as gruff or threatening as it needed to be. And again, that divide between really having the sort of one-on-one relationship between you and your console, it just reminds you that it's not there. So. Mm-hmm. That being said, the voice commands in battle, I think, is a really great idea.
Yep.
I didn't use squad commands very often in Mass Effect 2. I kind of just let my teammates handle it as they went along. But I could see that being really useful. But again, you're right. Not being able to do it with a regular microphone is kind of... It's a waste because I don't really want to buy a Kinect just for this reason. I do have a microphone. It's ready to go. Mm-hmm. And I see no reason why that couldn't have been implemented just as easily.
Yeah. I mean, and there's no reason for you to buy a Kinect. Like, that's not going to change... significantly your experience with the game. I mean, if Mass Effect continues to be Mass Effect, it's not going to be a make or break feature that you're going to be missing out on.
Well, I don't know. I would say that if I could input squad commands using my microphone, I wouldn't hesitate to do so. I would gladly enjoy that feature. I would use squad commands far more. And, you know, based upon what they're saying about the new enhanced difficulty in Mass Effect 3, it could prove very useful and very clutch in certain situations. So I could see it being a major feature that you wouldn't want to miss out on. I don't know if it's worth buying a Kinect for, but...
Yeah, it's just... it's very odd. I didn't really understand that whole... I mean, I guess I understand it from a certain, you know, business perspective. Like, you need to get this machine, this peripheral, in every single game you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And I think the voice commands make sense in the squad-based, you know, battles that take place in Mass Effect. But it just seems kind of, you know, it seems like a pretty bald play at people's wallets.
So what did you think about the announcement of Minecraft on the 360 with Kinect compatibility?
I thought that was pretty much the most exciting thing of the entire conference, or the entire
press
event for Microsoft. But I'm not, I don't know. It's weird. Like, what are you going to do? Like, wave your arm really fast to break a piece of wood? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I could see maybe like a spectator mode where you kind of rotate around a certain thing someone built. But I mean, the idea that Minecraft is just, well, really, the idea of Minecraft is the most mind-blowing thing in the entire world. Like, a year or 2 years ago, this thing was like a Flash or a Java browser based thing, and now it's on Xbox Live. Mind-blowing.
Yeah. I'm super interested to see how they're going to implement Kinect in it, and whether or not it's going to still be in beta when it launches.
this will be the first thing ever to reach premiere status on Xbox Live in beta.
Yeah. Well, you know, it sounds like we were both pretty underwhelmed with the Microsoft conference. Shall we move on?
When do you want to talk about Lara Croft?
We could talk about it now, if okay. you think. I mean, they showed new footage on stage at the press conference.
Yeah. I thought that was one of the more interesting things. Oh, by the way, Halo 4. Okay, surprise, surprise. We got that out of the way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you called it. I'm pretty sure I denied it last week.
I think that was in a pre-podcast chat session we were having, but I was talking about how that they were going to make a Halo remake and Halo 4, and then at the end of the Microsoft press conference, we're like, all right, Halo remake, and here's one more thing, and all of a sudden you hear Cortana, and you know, there it is. The weird thing about that, actually, before we move on to Lara, is they announced it as a trilogy for the Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way there's going to be three more Halo games for the 360.
I mean, they could. I bet you they'll pump those out pretty fast.
They can only do one per year for sure, right?
I mean, I guess, but one per year is still 3 years. That's super fast.
Well, it's so the first we're going to get Halo 4 probably in 2012, right?
Yep.
So 2014, we're still going to be playing an Xbox 360. I don't know. That sounds. I think they might do like a Halo 2 3 split here.
I mean, who knows? They might just. It's not like they're bound by blood to making sure the trilogy is only on that.
Yeah, I just thought it was a weird thing to say. It just kind of struck out at me like, oh, that's a pretty interesting claim that you think your system's going to last that long. Anyway, it's okay.
Moving on. Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider.
You know, I like Crystal Dynamics a lot. I really enjoyed the Guardian game that they did. From what they've talked about in terms of where they want to go with the Lara Croft reboot, you know, at this point, I'm actually pretty excited. And, you know, a lot of people were saying that they saw the trailer at E3 for the Tomb Raider game, and they thought it was more sort of like torture porn.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you had commented on that concern when we were first talking about some of the screenshots from the game.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that I think some of that is there. You know, you can sort of like her grunting and her exhaustion and her sort of, you know, almost being grabbed by some guy. It was really uncomfortable to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's actually one of the reasons I'm really excited to see the game, is to see a sort of Tomb Raider that's, or rather, to see a Lara Croft who's very vulnerable and human and sort of wounded and tangible, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I became much more interested in the game after seeing that more extended demo, but also way more worried about it. As far as like thematically, like, because I'm firmly in the camp of like the torture porn thing.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff seemed like more akin to something like Saw or something when I was watching it.
Yeah, it's graphic, but you know what's weird is like we have LA Noire out now, right? Where like these women are like brutalized and beaten and cut up in it. It's very graphic and disgusting. Mm-hmm. You know,
but it's meant to be like that,
right? But why do we think that Tomb Raider is not meant to be like that?
Because the way, and you know, this is all like fuzzy qualitative, you know, feelings that I'm expressing here, but I mean, the way that it was filmed was always from a perspective of making her seem like the object of someone's kind of viewing pleasure, like you're getting kind of a vicarious thrill out of her pain rather than partaking in it yourself.
Really?
Kind of a lot of downward camera angles, the way she grunted, and I know this, again, this is like the most qualitative thing, the way she grunted is like, I am out of control of this situation. Like, this situation is happening to me. I am not dealing with it. It is just happening. Whereas Nathan Drake, when he's like, oh, crap, it's kind of like, well, this thing's happening, and I'm going to deal with it, but it's still a pain in the ass. Whereas Lara was like, I can't believe this is happening to me and I don't know what to do about it.
Like, yeah, it's hard because I kind of agree, but I don't... That doesn't necessarily turn me off from the game.
Even
the camera angles, you know, like to some extent, I think they're trying to make her seem sort of diminutive in relation to her environment and the threats around her. Mm-hmm. You know, and even the grunt, like, yeah, she's not in control in the way Drake is. But Drake is kind of ridiculous, right? He's this over-the-top superhero. And to have someone who is very much related to Drake, you know, like we were talking about, I don't think this new Tomb Raider would exist if it wasn't for Uncharted.
Well, I mean, clearly not, because how does Uncharted 2... open? It opens with Drake has a stomach wound and he's kind of grunting his way out of a huge shaft, which is actually a train. And how does Tomb Raider open up? Lara sustains a stomach wound and makes her way up a huge vertical space. Like, mm-hmm. But just the way that they react to that situation is like, Drake is like, well, here's some bullshit I gotta deal with. And Lara's kind of, I don't know. I agree with you that it makes it much more interesting. I just am kind of more concerned about how they're going to walk that line.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the interesting thing is I just feel like if Lara wasn't female, mm-hmm. right, these issues wouldn't come up. And that's fine. That's normal to some extent, right? Because these images are calling up past images of sort of women in subordinate positions and being threatened and being objects of to be controlled. Yeah. But you know, I don't know. It's tough. We'll see when it launches.
And I followed the Giant Bomb coverage of E3 really extensively, and I heard from a couple of them that saw another demo of it, mm-hmm. that it was from a different section of the game where she had kind of started to take stock of things, and you started to see like the hints of who we consider Lara Croft start peeking through. And yeah. So they said it kind of put that stuff in context. So, you know, it's a very isolated slice of the game. So it's not necessarily reflective of how it's going to end up. It just kind yeah. of, it was striking to me. I was really surprised by it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's good. And I think that's what they were going for.
And it's something that we talked about before too. So it was kind of interesting to see like we did a podcast a while ago about the reboot and to see how they're proceeding along with it.
Yeah. And it's definitely in line in line with the themes that we discussed earlier. So
mm-hmm. more so too. It just surprised me. Yeah.
All right. Shall we?
Shall we? Next up. Well, I mean, there was a couple interspersed, like there was an E3 press conference. John Riccitiello made a big point of saying that there would be no fee for Battlefield, which I thought was a pretty amusing jab at Call of Duty.
Yeah, you know, and interestingly, and this kind of fits with a recent article that I posted, but also some of the things that we were talking about last week, was the same sort of features popping up throughout a lot of different games, like mm-hmm. EA Sports Football Club or whatever that they were repping. I don't know if it was at the EA conference or Microsoft, but those are the exact same features. Like, it's yeah. the same exact idea. Like, tons of statistics, tons of information, a lot of social connectivity.
And that seems to be the future. You know, they're trying to make their own little... Everyone's trying to make their own little social network around a specific game or a specific franchise, and trying to tie everyone into it, kind of make it persistent so people keep coming back to it. I could see why the big companies like EA, Activision, Microsoft want to do that, because I really do think that's where certain genres of games are going. But mm-hmm. we'll have to see how that all shakes out. You know, maybe next E3, no one will talk about it, just like no one's talking about casual stuff anymore.
Yeah.
The Ubisoft press conference was pretty absurd. It's hard to find a more tone-deaf company. That's pretty much like
yeah. I missed most of it. Rayman is a little bit exciting. Far Cry 3. I'm excited for Far Cry 3 just because I enjoyed Far Cry 2 so much. But from what I saw, I am very nervous about what they're doing with it.
It looks a lot more like Far Cry 1.
It does. I mean, both visually, because it's in sort of like a lush jungle area. But even thematically, like, I was not that impressed by the guy who was talking about insanity. It seemed he seemed like a sort of cliche villain in a way that the Jackal was not.
I guess. I mean, there's been a lot of terrorists named the Jackal, so we're gonna have
terrorists named the Jackal. But like, the themes that the Jackal was talking about, it wasn't something as easy to say. Oh well, violence comes from crazy people. Like, that's mm-hmm. that's not really his point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, they've got rid of degrading weapons, which I'm sure some people will be incredibly excited about, but I, for one, think sort of violates the themes that made Far Cry 2 so interesting.
You're not all hyped up. Mr. Caffeine didn't get you all pumped up for that.
Yeah. No, oh God, Mr. Caffeine.
It's really hard to imagine the kind of chain of command in a company like Ubisoft.
Oh God, like...
How does that decision get made? Like, who thinks that's a good idea? And who... Who pumps all that money into making all those mock-ups of like, oh, what if this game was made 20 years ago? You know, like, that all that money could have been better spent giving the team that's supposedly making Beyond Good and Evil 2 more money.
Or just making those games, because some of them looked sweet.
Yeah, it's just a very... I don't get it. Like,
who okayed that guy's, like, dick jokes? Those were terrible.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he was going off script or something, but, like, the difference between that guy and... Ken Levine, like, their stage presence, or even Cliff Bleszinski or Tim Schafer, like, there's just such a stark contrast between people who seem genuine and people that are up there being fake. I don't know. It just kind of blows my mind.
Yeah.
Speaking of Ken Levine, let's go to Sony.
Let's.
Man, Sony had a lot of stuff to cover even before we get to Ken Levine. They did say sorry about about all the PSN. Technical, yeah, PSN. Yeah.
I like that. I thought Jack Tretton seemed genuine as well. He seemed like he was, you know,
He's a pretty classy guy, I guess. I mean, I don't really know much about him, but he did pretty well on stage.
He didn't just apologize to gamers either. He apologized to third-party developers.
Yeah. And that's something that I was kind of looking for personally. Like, I'm really interested in seeing how Sony kind of puts the pieces back together as far as their partnerships go, rather than just players, because we're really the last link of the chain here.
Yeah, so, I mean, I thought they did a fantastic job. I've already forgotten what that was even about.
What happened?
let's just jump to the PS Vita, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's the worst kept secret that it was going to be called the Vita. It was kind of neat seeing Ken Levine do a whole, like, you know, iPod thing where he pulls it out of his pocket.
Yeah.
And it's funny because he, and I saw an interview with him afterwards, and he was saying that they wanted me on stage to talk about this thing. But, you know, we haven't really done anything for it yet. And we're not really working on anything actively for it yet. We just plan on doing it.
It just sounds cool.
Yeah, he's like, and you know, I had to do something. So I had to kind of like pull out of my pocket. You know, I had to be a little bit showy about it because what else do I have?
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty amusing and very like a very genuine response. And you know, then they went on to demo some more interesting things, you know, more practical things about it. What did they have? They had the Uncharted thing, right?
They had a feature where it was like a backtouch sort of strategy game where you can kind of create islands. Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, and, you know, they showed the idea of, you know, you're playing a game on the PS3. One of their examples that I thought was really cool was the sort of dungeon creator where you both invade dungeons and protect your own.
Mm-hmm.
That they implied very heavily was persistent, constant. Like, it was your dungeon can be attacked at any point, and you can either use your Vita or use your PS3 to counter and protect it.
Mm-hmm.
So... And then they showed that same game, I think it was called Ruin.
Yeah.
You know, switching back and forth between playing it on the PS3 as, you know, the person attacking a dungeon, and then going to your Vita and defending your dungeon from mm-hmm. attack. I thought that was awesome. I think that's so cool. I don't know what you thought, but I think that I was kind of blown away by the Vita, and I mean, the name is fucking terrible, don't get me wrong, but
yeah, but what are you gonna do?
But I was, you know, like, I was going into this thinking, wow, you know, Sony's got to make up for this PS3, Sony's going to have to make up for this PSN debacle, and I don't know what they're going to do. You know, we've kind of seen everything that there was going to be seen. You know, I don't really want more PS Move, and they didn't. They focused on this new handheld,
yeah,
and lower the price as low as $250. Like, that's kind of... That's shocking.
That was shocking. I bet. Yeah. I mean, I that's a really aggressive move towards the 3DS. I felt.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, if I had to decide now, would I get a 3DS or the PS Vita? I think hands down, I would get the PS Vita.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of cool stuff with it, and I'm interested to see if things like that demo you were talking about, Ruin, where you're transferring things back and forth. Whether that can exist in a world where an iPhone developer can kind of just copy that persistent idea of, you know, the always-on dungeon, yeah, and put it on a device that people actually always have on them. Because, I mean, I don't know. I feel like Sony's fighting the wrong battle here. Like, Nintendo and Sony are kind of focused on each other, while Steve Jobs is kind of taking all their customers and laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah, I can see that. But, you know, like, Steve Jobs and the iOS in general have always sort of had a problem, at least as I've perceived it, of not having the sort of game support that is as robust as, like, a sort of console.
Yeah.
And the Sony's very much stressed the idea that you're getting major titles on this device, and the fact that you can connect it with your PS3 means that, you know, you really are playing the same games. It's not just a bad port to a handheld that doesn't have the sort of graphical fidelity or power to sort of manage a long and, you know, graphically intensive game. this is something else entirely, where like you've got new inputs, you've got a sort of back touchpad. I don't really know how it's going to be implemented, but you have something that's a little bit more than just a shrunken down PS3.
Yeah, and for things like the Little Big Planet demo that they showed, you know, I can really see all, because not only do they have that back touch panel, they have the front touch. The front is a touch screen as well,
which is going to be amazing for Little Big Planet and building maps.
Yeah, it's a perfect little machine to do that, and that is the type of stuff that excites me rather than things like Uncharted on the Vita, because you know it's you might as well just play an Uncharted on a huge screen. Yeah. You know, I already think that the jumps and the traversal in Uncharted are too forgiving. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you can draw a line and have Drake automatically jump through that touch line that you drew just draws attention to the fact that Uncharted is a fake platformer.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I would agree. That's a sort of a bad way to implement the touchscreen. And I think it was just done to be sort of gimmicky.
Yeah,
but that doesn't confine those types of games. I mean, you still have the you know the twin sticks. It's not like it's impossible to make a normal sort of platformer.
Very true. I just hope that they don't. I hope that that touch on the end on the Vita doesn't become like the 2012 or 11 version of the Wii Waggle. You know, like just don't do it for the sake of doing it.
Yeah, and you know, I genuinely think that that's probably not going to be the case, because we've already seen on the iOS failed touchpad interfaces. So unless people know that they can get it right, why even bother trying, to some extent? It just feels to me like the Vita is so full of stuff and so full of sort of like some of the... covering some of the possibilities that the other console makers are sort of focusing on in one way or another, you know? Like... Maybe I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but the Wii U's sort of idea of asynchronous play, right? They stress that in their conference. That's very possible on the Vita, and I don't see it being completely incompatible in sort of future versions of the device. So I feel like in a lot of ways, Sony sort of covered their bases in all of their bases in this sort of handheld device that is super cost effective, you know.
Much more so than Microsoft, who's still kind of hacking away at the Kinect and trying to get that into, you know, the mainstream core games as well as more casual traditional motion oriented type things. Before we get off of motion, was there any Move related stuff that grabbed you?
Not even a little bit.
Even Ken Levine talking about Move in BioShock Infinite?
Yeah, I mean, everything Ken Levine says is kind of exciting, I think.
It is, yes. You read the about, phone like, book up there.
So, I mean, yeah, that's exciting. The game's going to be fucking awesome whether or not I use the Move.
That is true.
So, yeah, you know, we'll see.
Star Trek Phaser, Move Control.
Hey, Star Trek looked awesome.
No, that game looked terrible, George. What? You're wrong.
No, that looked like Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, terrible. Like, Mass Effect is not a shooter. Like, the shooting is the worst part of Mass Effect.
Yeah, okay, the shooting is not great in Mass Effect, I'll admit, but...
There's already a Star Trek game. It's called Mass Effect.
Here's the difference. I'm comparing this Star Trek game from Star Trek Online that we've seen recently that looks even worse.
Well, I mean, Star Trek Online is, like, it is an MMO, but it's at least kind of what you do in Star Trek, which is fly around and talk to people.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is like this looks like they could theoretically revitalize something from that franchise.
Gears of Trek.
I am not a Trekkie, so you know, I for one think that it looks cool.
I don't know. I'm so surprised that you think that's exciting. It's a cover-based shooter with laser guns.
I'm not getting like my checkbook out quite yet. I'm just saying, like, I'm surprised that they decided to actually focus on that in any significant way. And I think that for people who aren't into Star Trek, maybe it worked.
Yeah, you're right. The way that they kind of put a spotlight on it and was like, hey, we got this cool Move controller add-on for it, like, was kind of shocking to me. I don't know. It just seemed like I didn't get the sense that that game had the pedigree of being in an E3 presentation. You know, which isn't saying anything bad about the developer or anything. I just didn't, like, to lead off a press conference with Uncharted and in that same press conference have a Star Trek segment was very surprising. Uncharted 3, that's going to be a good game, right?
Yeah, of course it is. You're damn right. Day one.
Yeah, no surprises there. I'm kind of surprised that they led with Uncharted 3. I thought they would kind of shut the show down by rolling the Uncharted 3 footage and then just dropping the mic and leaving.
I think they knew that the Vita was going to be their star.
All right. Pretty much it for Sony, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Getting to the real madness.
Yeah, so the Nintendo press conference.
The old Nintendo press conference.
It opened up with an orchestra playing Zelda music. I thought that was neat.
Yeah, a little nerd service there.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Zelda's 25th anniversary, they're going to be doing symphonies, like, all across the nation. That's kind of
cool. That was pretty cool.
I would go to one of those. I mean, I saw at BlizzCon, I saw, what is it, Games Live?
Oh, yeah, Video Games Live. Video Games Live.
They're amazing. I would so gladly see them again. And something just around Zelda, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, it was nice to see. And, you know, Miyamoto's very attractive character up there. Like, he always seems really happy and like he seems just pumped to be up there.
Oh, I mean, that guy has a smile that is just you know, completely unique.
Yeah, so yeah, there's a lot of Zelda stuff. You know, they're giving away 4 swords downloadable on the DS.
Yeah, that's really neat.
A big swath of 3DS stuff in the beginning. Well, I don't know, stuff that didn't really, I feel like they're still kind of finding their footing with the 3DS. Nothing really jumped out at me as something that really kind of broke the mold.
Yeah. Interestingly, you know, while I was watching the Nintendo conference and thinking about the 3DS and sort of what it offers now, the Vita's already in my head. You know, I can't shake Sony's handheld from my mind, especially now that I know that it's just as costly as the 3DS. They would have had to do a lot to convince me that the 3DS is a smarter purchase than the Vita.
Yeah, I mean, it's something where Nintendo's going to have to, you know, do what they always do, which is show...
Lower the price?
Well, no, I mean, like, they will lower the price for sure, and you know that they're going to put out another 3DS sooner rather than later, like one with a better battery life and one with, you know, various other improvements. Maybe I mean, they did the same thing. Well, yeah, I mean, like, they'll go the opposite direction this time. They want a more substantial console. But, I mean, I really, it still feels like it's kind of in first revision phase. Mm-hmm. And with the DS... You know, the DS is one of the most successful pieces of video game hardware of all time, and it took itself a while to find its footing. It was a year or two before people really started cluing into what the two screens were for.
Yeah.
And so it still feels like they're kind of in that situation with the 3DS. Like, how much do you use the 3D? How much do you use the accelerometers? You know, right now it just feels very port heavy.
So you have a lot of faith. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, who else besides Nintendo has shown that they can consistently innovate with a inferior piece of hardware, so at least from a technical perspective?
Let's presume for a second that you have no handheld. Mm-hmm. Would you buy a 3DS or would you buy the Vita? From what we know now.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. That's a really tough choice. I mean, if it weren't for Little Big Planet, I would buy a 3DS because I honestly think that Nintendo is more innovative in the handheld space. Mm-hmm. Like, everything that I've seen on the PSP has just been shrunk down versions of console type stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel like if I bought a Vita, I would just be using it as a huge PlayStation controller and playing things on my PS3. In which case, like, why? You know, why am I there? Like, I'm wanting something that is unique to the piece of hardware if I'm gonna buy a dedicated piece of gaming hardware.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't really point to a lot of games right now that take advantage of it like that. I mean, we'll have to see what they do with the new Mario game that's coming out. Yeah. And Kid Icarus and a couple other things. But right now, it just doesn't seem like the handheld space is all that exciting, other than just, you know, pure technical possibilities.
That's absolutely true. But, you know, from what I saw out of Sony, that the Vita does to me feel very innovative.
It is like from a technical perspective, like, but so is the PSP. Like, the PSP is a pretty neat piece of hardware. Mm-hmm. The problem is I just feel like people just didn't do a lot with it.
Yeah. But, I mean, weren't people making the same complaints about the DS?
I mean, people were, but the DS got it together. Yeah. You know, I mean, the PSP was successful, but it was successful in a very traditional way.
The question is, like, what is, the 3DS adds 3D to the mix. But the Vita adds a lot more than just one thing. You know, the back touchpad, the connectivity things. So, you know, if I had no handle whatsoever, you could go get a DS that's not like a 3DS, the normal DS, for very cheap. I'd just get a Vita and then wait a while and then get a normal DS.
Yeah, and you know that the DS and DSIs are going to be around for years to come. I mean, it's still one of the smartest single hardware purchases you can make is to get a DS Lite.
It doesn't feel like 3DS is that big of an advancement, whereas I feel like the Vita is going above and beyond what the PSP offered.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited to see what happens with that and, you know, to see what happens in response to... I mean, really, like, if I was being completely honest, I would just get an iPad because, like, I really do think the most unique stuff is happening on iOS and Android. Because they're not trying to go for Uncharted stuff. I mean, what was the biggest game of last year? Angry Birds. Like, the games with the biggest impact in the handheld space are not coming from the big companies anymore.
But then I want to see how often you can play Angry Birds before you get really fucking sick of it.
I'm not saying it would be a smart purchase. Yeah. I'm just saying for pure academic and research purposes, like, I really do think the most important space right now is Android and iOS.
Yeah, certainly, especially in regards to sort of content that's being delivered that's not just games.
Which is what they kind of want to be doing anyway. Like, all these companies are trying to position themselves to be like an all-encompassing lifestyle, not just a game thing.
Yeah, that's true. While we're on the subjects of tablets, shall we talk about the Wii U?
Let's.
Another terrible name. Why don't
you talk about that?
6.2-inch screen.
Yeah,
backwards
I measured it out when I was trying to get a good sense of how large that was.
And it's so, fucking like, massive.
I was drawing pictures on pieces of paper and stuff, and like trying to figure out, and like it's a sizable piece of plastic.
And you thought the Xbox controller was big? It's backwards compatible. It's a huge controller. You know, I did not expect this at all. Did you see this coming? I mean, we knew that their controller would have a screen in it.
I mean, it was pretty much what the rumors were. You know, there were some mock-ups that leaked out, and
oh really, and people, I missed the mock-ups.
Well, I mean, it was like patent filings and stuff like that, but I mean, it, like, people were saying that there's going to be a screen in the middle, and there's going to be some, you know, normal buttons flanking that screen, and it's kind of, it was much bigger than I thought. I understand what you're saying there. Like, I was surprised at how much of a tablet-like thing it looks like.
And they showed a lot of different ways that they're imagining the Wii U fitting into sort of normal games. They showed like a golf swing where like it shows a picture of a golf ball, which seemed just kind of like aesthetically pleasing, not at all necessary.
Yeah.
You know, they emphasized some of the sort of asynchronous play that you could be doing with a new Mario game, or I shouldn't say game. All of these were concepts.
Yeah, I mean, all the demos were a lot of the demos actually were. You know, they, like you were saying, they were all about the asynchronous and uneven knowledged players. I thought the coolest thing, speaking of Minority Report, was the footage of, you know, the mock-up of them either throwing shurikens onto the big screen from the pad.
Yeah, or, that was sweet.
You know, when the son or the daughter was looking at a picture on the pad and then swiped the picture onto the big screen, because that stuff's just straight up Minority Report. Like, that stuff actually happens in that movie.
Yeah, and I kept thinking, like, this could be, I could see this being fantastic in certain other sort of, like, that feature, right, would be amazing in running a D&D campaign, for example.
Yeah.
Not even something that's just on the Wii, but, like, I can show a board on my television screen, each of my players could have a controller that could sort of affect where their characters are, and I as the DM can have a full view map. That's really neat, and that sort of asynchronous play, I mean, we could imagine in all sorts of board games. We could imagine it being implemented in a ton of multiplayer games, really sort of reinvigorating couch co-op. That's super exciting stuff.
Yeah, and Nintendo's been all about that, you know, later in life in the Wii. You know, they are about putting people together in the same room and given them unique experiences, you know, integrating balance board stuff, integrating four-player Mario. I mean, this is just the next step of doing something like that.
One of the interesting things to me is sort of how they're imagining the Wii U controller to connect to the console. And the sort of the way, I guess, that these devices are now interfacing with their sort of mothership, right?
Mm-hmm.
It looks like the Wii U was not actually creating its own image. Like it seems like it's just drawing, getting information from the console.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, my impression is, and who knows if, you know, how it's actually going to end up, is that the data is just streaming to the screen on the pad.
Yeah, it's like on live, like a local on live.
Yeah, which makes me suspicious as to if you're ever going to be able to have more than one tablet.
Yeah.
Because I think that there could be some bandwidth issues, basically. It's hard to render and send all of the, you know, four different screens to four different devices.
Well, and it just feels less less maneuverable to me than, say, like the PS Vita.
Mm. Yeah, this is definitely, it's anchored. You're right. Like, it is anchored to the mothership. Like, this, and you know, Reggie and all the other Nintendo folks have been very honest. Like, this thing is not supposed to leave the house.
I mean, it's not just that you can't take it out of the house either. You know, it's like, I don't know. It just feels to me like what the Vita offers, right? Like, what we can imagine that being used in similar ways, right? It's theoretically possible to have the Vita link up to your PS3 and have multiple Vita. Maybe your friends come over and bring theirs and have theirs mm-hmm. connect to your PS3 at the same time as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I'm comparing the two devices, it seems as if the Wii U is really cool. I really like the idea of that controller and the sort of ideas that they had for it, but it doesn't feel like the other consoles are, you know, in any way far behind from what the Wii U is doing, right? It doesn't seem like it would be that big of an effort to catch up in some way.
The thing is that the PSP and the PS3 can already do that. Like, there are games where you can use the PSP as a controller on the PS3. The problem is getting people to do it and getting companies to design intelligently for the hardware that they have, which is why I always kind of place my faith in Nintendo, because they're really good at that. They're good at finding innovative ways, whereas Sony is good at just throwing a bunch of tools at people. We talked about this when we were talking about the PSN. Like, Sony has a relatively open, versatile console. It's just that people don't really do a lot with it, whereas Nintendo squeezes every last drop out of what they do have, even if it's less than the other people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and the Nintendo, they advertised, you know, Arkham City is going to be launching with Wii U compatibility.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, Arkham City is going to come to Wii U a year after Arkham City launches. Like,
right, but the point being, like, they've already tied major developers to their console.
Yeah. And you know, the most exciting thing about that entire presentation was when they showed Ken Levine talking about the Wii U.
Yeah.
Because it's like, all right, well, maybe he's doing something for that. That'll be cool. And then after that, they followed him up with Warren Spector.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, anytime you see visionaries like that saying, I'm really excited to see what this thing can do and what it means for the future, of course I'm going to be on board, right?
Yeah.
Like, sure, yeah, you're right. I'm totally excited now, too. That's great. That's fantastic.
And they, what else? I mean, they showed some things that will come to the console. Darksiders 2, and they showed as of yet unnamed Assassin's Creed property. I mean, they're striking all the right notes. And, you know, mm-hmm. they hinted at a Smash Brothers game, and you know that there's going to be a Mario game, obviously.
Oh, which would be awesome, yeah.
Yeah. And so to see all those people, at least now, pretty bullish on it is reassuring. We'll have to see how it all shakes out. This kind of, for me, it kind of smells like this will be the second coming of, like, the Wii or the GameCube or, God forbid, even the Dreamcast. You know, this is going to be coming out at a very strange time in the console cycle.
Yeah, knock on wood. You know, like, it feels to me that, especially from, you know, Sony's and Nintendo's conference, that we're getting some really amazing technological advancements that, mm-hmm. You know, I don't think we can go backwards. It's not like we'll just lose this. The idea is there, right? Asynchronous play is a very real reality, and it's, you know, next year we'll be able to sort of think about new ways that this can be implemented in a way that we just haven't had before in both the Vita and the Wii U. You know, and the sort of the relationships that you can have between what you're holding in your hands and your console itself. That's really amazing. And I don't know whether or not, you know, Wii U's a day one purchase. It's still so far away. Everything is just conceptual. It still feels very skin and bones. Who knows what it's going to be like by the time it actually launches? Who knows what the battery life is? Who knows what the cost is going to be? But I feel like now, at this point, there's no going back in terms of what we... the sort of the requests we can now levy against Nintendo and Sony and Xbox about, you know, the sort of technological advancements. We know you can do it now, so start turning these things out.
And also, from in addition, on the software side, like, Minecraft has changed everything. Like, we can now say, like, well, you got Minecraft on Xbox Live. Where are my other independent things? You know, it's there's all these kind of all these traditional barriers, both technological and design and philosophical, are starting to fade away.
Well, I mean, any last thoughts on the conferences overall? Is there a winner? If we can, is it competitive?
A winner. The winner is Ken Levine.
I'll give him a trophy. That sounds good.
He wins E3. Man, you know, I tried to be on BioShock Infinite Blackout, but watching those conferences means you can't really be on Blackout completely.
Yeah.
That game is going to be bananas.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Well, I mean, any other games out of E3 then?
There must be some small titles that I'm missing out on, because I probably just got starstruck by all the big things. But I mean, you know, the biggest thing for me is just all of the, like I said, all of the barriers kind of breaking down. Like you were saying, we can't go, it's hard to go backwards now that you know all of this stuff is possible.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see, because it feels like everyone's always fighting. They're like the army. The army's, the phrase is, you know, the army's always fighting the last war. Like, and the console manufacturers are always kind of addressing last year's complaints. Like, now people are kind of shifting back towards core, away from casual stuff. You know, motion is now a big thing for Microsoft when they really should have been doing that 2 years ago or 1 year ago. Mm-hmm. And so the big thing is that there are some, like, Nintendo's trying to strike out and do something new. Sony's trying to do something new as far as connectivity goes, which I thought was interesting. Like, that's one thing. We didn't talk about Dust. I just made a pun about it at the very beginning. Did you catch this announcement?
Which Dust are you talking about? There's Dust. Two Dust games, oddly enough. One that wasn't really announced and one that was.
Well, this one is, I think it's called Dust. Maybe I'm mistaking it. But the one that is connected to EVE Online.
Yeah, so I think it's called, like, is that just Dust, or is that Dust 514 or something? Whatever, it's a Dust. Know.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, even that idea sounds fucking amazing.
I mean, the fact, I'm scared that EVE Online is coming to the consoles, because that is just means that they're escaping the bounds of their internet chains and are now taking over the world.
Yeah. I mean, it seems we've known about Dust for a while now, that they've been trying to make it. So it really felt to me more like a reminder, like, oh yeah, this is on its way and it's going to be pretty amazing. But even that is a sort of like technological, you know, leap.
And philosophical as well, because, I mean, they were saying that things that happen in Dust will affect EVE, like the money you make and spend and the battles won and lost on foot affect the larger space opera up in space.
Yeah, and what's interesting too is that, you know, if it's a fun game, if it's a cool shooter, I could definitely see, you know, people who start playing Dust regularly become aware of, you know, their sort of political... affiliations in EVE Online, you know, as if like taking two gaming worlds and saying, look, you're both operating in very different spheres, you're playing completely different games, but there's a relationship here and we can make it strong. You can imagine, say, someone who's very good at a shooter, very good at Dust, selling themselves as a mercenary for these players of a completely different game.
There will be real life mercenaries. Like, it's just scary. Like, there could be legions of elite first-person shooters, and, like, there's going to be some kingpin up in space hiring them.
I hope to be that kingpin.
Yeah. Oh man, that's gonna be, if that takes hold, that will be the most amazing thing to watch.
Yeah. One game I'm really excited about was that we saw a bit more footage from as well, was Journey.
Oh,
that,
yeah,
that game,
yeah.
Companies. And Genova Chen, I watched this video where Genova Chen was talking a bit about his sort of like design principles, and God, he's so smart. Everything he says, I keep thinking, yeah, this is exactly what I want out of a game too. Like, what a coincidence. You're designing this game that seems perfectly built for me and addressing these themes that are incredibly interesting, and I'm just waiting to see how it happens. And watching some of the footage from Journey and seeing that, yes, in fact, the game is as gorgeous as we expect it to be, makes me really excited. And that's probably, you know, maybe besides Mass Effect 3, that's probably the game I'm most excited about coming out of E3.
Yeah, for sure. Same here. And for people that want, like I said, I was following the Giant Bomb coverage, and what they do is they basically rent a house in LA and kind of broadcast out of that for the entire E3. And they had people, they had a lot of interesting conversations during their podcast. Like, they had people come on, and, you know, it's late at night, people have had a couple beers, so people start talking more freely.
Yeah, they open their mouths. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they had Jonathan Blow in the same room with like Xbox Live content curators, mm-hmm. and sparks started to fly a little bit, which was really interesting.
Really?
Yeah. They had David Jaffe stop by, and he was talking about, like, very openly talking about his like trepidation and kind of disappointments with going back to Twisted Metal, and also the things he was excited about Twisted Metal. Like, it was a very honest conversation about like how he came to make another Twisted Metal game after coming off what is basically considered, you know, a disappointment with Calling All Cars.
Yeah.
They had Genova Chen on, and he was talking a lot about, you know, how to best criticize other game developers and what is good criticism and what is useful for people making games. So yeah, I, if you scrub through all of their hours and hours of podcasts, you'll find some pretty interesting and honest conversation with some opinionated folks.
So all of these are archived on their site?
Yeah.
Cool. We'll go ahead and put them in the show notes for people as well.
I mean, you got to wade through a lot of stuff. And like I said, there's been a couple drinks, and this stuff is being recorded at like, you know, 11 o'clock at night when the show closes. But if you want some raw, yeah, David Jaffe, that's your source.
Yeah. Some insight with him as well. Yeah. All right. Any last thoughts?
No, I'm E3'd out. E3 has beat me.
Yeah, it's crazy. The amount of just...
I wasn't even there.
And there was just... I felt like I was tapped into it the entire time. So, well, good. Good for everybody.
Good for everyone. Folks that watched E3 online, or maybe you even went there, you want to offer your thoughts on the show floor, you can send us emails at experiencepoints@gmail.com.
We would also love to hear your thoughts on some of the games you're most excited to hear about. You can share those at experiencepoints.net in the comment section. We update the site Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evenings with our own writings as well as the podcast. And you can also find us over at popmatters.com on the Moving Pixels blog, as well as plenty of other writers for you to enjoy.
All right, until next time, take it easy.
So long.